assembled devotees, O glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, Guru Premanandi. Nice to be here in Melbourne again, and amongst the devotees. It's so nice to see and to hear all the devotees chanting. Thank you for sharing that. So today, for this next 3 days, I wanted to present to you something that I found very rewarding. Recently, a month or more ago, we went to China. We went to Beijing, Shanghai, and then we spent a week in Hong Kong. So it was my first serious visit to China, but as some of you may know, we were first married and we began to preach in Hong Kong in 1970 at Srila Prabhupada's request. And at first, thinking about it, and when we were offered the opportunity, I was very young and very idealistic and thought, oh yes, we will save the Chinese people because we are Krishna's devotees and we know the absolute truth and we are going to distribute love of Godhead and save the whole world. I'd only been a devotee for 6 months. So I was very enthusiastic and somewhat naive. So I was requested to go there, and I went, and I met my husband-to-be a few hours before we got married. That was quite striking. We didn't really know each other. So it was actually quite extraordinary, and it was something that some people were doing in those days, because the fire of Krishna consciousness was very high. And most of the people who were devotees were young, and most of them were also Westerners, so they didn't have any integration into the culture that surrounds Krishna consciousness that we now see and understand. So we were very bouncy, like if you ever have seen a young calf, they don't exactly walk, they kind of bounce along because they don't have much weight and they're very young, and so they're very excited and they bounce along. So we also were very bouncy and very enthusiastic. But the difficulty was that along with our enthusiasm, then there was reality. And reality came down like a crushing blow on many people's heads, when they suddenly realized, I can't do this. I've been grossly illusioned as to my capacity and my ability and even my maturity in spiritual life. I've taken on something, but I actually can't do this. And so then something happens. You have to make an adjustment, because you can no longer hold up Govardhan Hill on your little finger. It's starting to feel like, oh wow, I've made a mistake here. Just like it is described in Vrindavan, when Krishna lifts up Govardhan Hill, which is a vast mountain range, not just one small hill that you can see the tip of Govardhan now if you visit Vrindavan. It was a vast mountainous place, and Krishna very effortlessly put his hand underneath. He went into a cave, put his hand underneath, and with his little finger, not even his pointing finger, and with his left hand, not even his right hand, he very effortlessly lifted up a hill, a mountain, which no one can do. And when he lifted up the hill, all the people, because it was a very dangerous situation, because there was a vast storm taking place and everybody was about to be killed. So Krishna, very nonchalant is the word, nonchalant, casually he lifted up the hill and said to everyone, come under here, it's like an umbrella, you'll all be okay. And the rocks that fell down as he lifted up the hill provided a wall all the way round, so that the people, the water didn't rush in under the hill. And also when Krishna lifted up the hill, underneath the hill there wasn't rocks and roots and dirty things and snakes and worms all falling down, and cockroaches and things all coming on their heads. But there was this incredible valley that was splendorous beyond description. And there were pathways, and they were paved with jewels. And there was grass for all the cows that looked like emeralds. It was so extraordinary. And all the cows came running underneath, and all the people came running underneath, and they saw palaces and pleasure gardens and waterfalls and all kinds of scenery. Now, if that was us, we would say, hold it a little higher so I can see what's going on here. Wow, look at that. And we grab our family and say, let's go have a look at the mountain over there. Or look at that interesting thing. And we take our family with us, and off we would go. And we would say thank you to Krishna for holding up the hill so that we could all enjoy ourselves underneath the hill. And that is why we're here in the material world. And we are not under that hill. Because the residents of Vrindavan didn't have that sentiment that me and mine, me, my body, and my family, and my friends, and my job, and my house, and my. They were not divided like that. You see, now we are divided. We have part for Krishna and part for us. And so when I got to Hong Kong, I realized, oh, part for Krishna, part for me. What am I going to get out of this? I don't think I'm going to enjoy this very much, actually. I don't even know this person. And I married them. What am I going to do with this? So it was a very difficult initial beginning. But we somehow or other made it for some time. We stayed in Hong Kong. We established eventually a temple. And so the preaching there, it took root. And then after some time, the weight of Govardhan Hill became too much, and we chose, in fact, to leave. So we left, and we came back to Australia, and then we went on from there in our life's journey. But when we left, Srila Prabhupada was very disappointed. He was very shocked, very disappointed. We just told him, we didn't ask him, we're leaving. So he was like, what? What is this? I was thinking you were very responsible and managing nicely there. And we said, well, no, we're having a hard time and we want to go back to Australia and see our parents and do this and do that and so forth. Like us, if we were under Govardhan Hill, we would want to explore. So we did that. And Srila Prabhupada wrote us a letter. We came to Melbourne and he wrote us a letter there and he said, you can go, I can understand that you're restless. He didn't say it quite like that. He said it very tactfully. But I can understand you're a little restless, so you can go for some time, but you should come back. And I was like, oh no. How can we get that clause out of there? We have to come back. But because we were very young and very immature, we didn't know the great gifts that Krishna was giving and that Krishna was going to provide in the future. And so we were impatient. But factually speaking, we did go back many, many years later. I think it was about 15 years before we actually ended up back in Hong Kong. We went to different places. And when we got there, there were many Chinese devotees. And they were very happy. They were like, oh, you started all of this. We were like, well, sort of. Do you really want to know? And it actually was interesting because they quite delighted in hearing all our mistakes. Because we're all struggling, isn't it? We're all struggling in some way or another. So we look at other people and we tend to think, oh, they don't have any problems like me. I have so many difficulties. This is so hard. But that one looks like they're doing good with that, and that one's good at that, and that one's very good at that. So, oh, I don't know about me. So it was quite a pleasurable experience to go back there. We've been back many times to Hong Kong and share with them our mistakes, our difficulties, our struggles, our immaturity, and to encourage them that if we have grown up, you'll grow up. If you see little children here and you think, oh, little children, they make noise, but then you see around you so many adults, you have to understand that a little child becomes an adult, and so therefore we accept the stage of a little child, we accept that because that's the beginning of an adult. We don't think there's a difference between children and adults. Children are one thing and adults are another. But we see an evolution taking place before the living being, the growing up. So similarly, when we see young, struggling devotees, we know if they stick to the process as best they can, even if they make mistakes, Krishna will compensate for that, and he will encourage them, and he will strengthen them. Because he's very, very kind, and he's situated within each of our heart. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna this, that I'm situated within the heart. And he says also, from knowledge comes from me, remembrance comes from me, and also forgetfulness comes from me. If you want to forget, I can enable your forgetfulness. If you want to remember, if you're saying, please, please, I don't want to forget, I don't want to forget, then I can enable that also. And he also tells Arjuna that for one who sees me everywhere, everywhere they go, they see Krishna. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I'm never lost. And he's never lost to me. Because, you see, there's no duality. There's no me and mine and you and yours. There's no, and it's not an impersonal oneness where we say, oh, we're all one and the same. This is a common misconception of modern spiritualism. But we see that we're one and the same in the sense that we're Krishnas. We all belong to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. So interestingly enough, today we're going to speak, I'm not going to emphasize the normal Bhagavatam presentation, which is respected, of reading the verse and repeating the Sanskrit, because I want to get through a certain amount of subject matter in the next 3 days. So back to China, when I got to Beijing, I found this particular verse that we'll read today. And as I was reading it through, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but Srila Prabhupada points out in his one sentence purport that this verse is also coming into another place. You can find this verse somewhere else as well. This very same verse is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in chapter 9, and it's verse 43, I think, or 46. And then in the next few verses, again, it's the not the next verse, but the verse after that, Srila Prabhupada says, this verse, the next after verse, is also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that is text 42. So when I was preparing a class in China, I was very excited. At first I said, oh, it's a very short purport. But then I saw, oh, there's a clue here, like a treasure hunt. You know, in a treasure hunt, you leave a little message for the people who are looking for the treasure. And the message, you put it under a tree, maybe, and you say, please go 20 steps north and then 15 steps south, and turn around past a big another building, and there you will find your next clue. So the excited participants all take their steps, and they turn and they take that, and when they get there, they find another clue. And in this way, they have a very exciting time trying to find the treasure. So Krishna consciousness is actually like that. In the beginning, it's difficult because we're struggling to balance the material and the spiritual. We're struggling to balance the me and mine needs with the pleasing Krishna. And even though we know the philosophy, after some time we memorize that and even we imbibe it, and if we're brought up in a very pious way in the culture or as a devotee, we've had that with us all the time. But it's another thing to actually actively live like that and to be able to actually see like that and to work in this world with that mind focus. That's not easy. That's not easy, and that's usually where most people have the greatest amount of difficulty. So in the beginning, one has to keep most of his attention on himself or herself. The main person that you're worried about is you, because you're you. You're responsible for you, and you have to live with you, because you're you. And you have to get it moving. All the weight of responsibility for your life is on you. So therefore, one is trying to assimilate the different things one is hearing, trying to work out how to get them into place. And of course, as part of that keeping your mind on you, it doesn't mean we don't care about anybody else. It doesn't mean that we don't take advice from other people. We must do that. But everything we're doing is trying to steer the vehicle of me. But after some time, that gets a bit easier, just like learning to drive a car. Now I know how to drive a car. I don't have to remember all the time I'm supposed to turn around, I'm supposed to flick this thing, I'm supposed to go like this, I'm supposed to do this. That's become now ingrained and automatic. So at the time as it starts to become automatic, two things can happen. One is that somebody can start thinking, oh, I know all about Krishna consciousness. I know all about Krishna. I've read the Bhagavad Gita 50 times. I've read the Srimad Bhagavatam. I've done this, I've done that. What's next? I'm a little bit bored. This can happen. And we've seen this on our journey. We've seen many people go down this and they get onto their Google, onto their little machine, and they find, oh, that's very interesting. Oh, maybe I'll read that. Maybe I'll find out about that. And they start to deviate and branch out into a very kind of a personally chosen series of informations that come into their consciousness in the same thoughtless way that they read Bhagavad Gita and they read Srimad Bhagavatam. And I say thoughtless because Srila Prabhupada set up the Bhagavad Gita class that you read one verse a day and you meditate on that verse all day. And I can't do that. You know, sometimes the verses seem to me to be a little odd. They're an intermediate verse between something and something. Or they're a long list of kings' names. And I think, oh, I've never heard of these people. Why do I have to think about them? But you see, a disciplined, thoughtful person accepts the instruction deeply that he's been given, and he tries to apply it. And so a thoughtful person always feels that I seem to be not going anywhere. I've got so much work to do. I can't afford any time waste. Because I've got so much work to do on my own self and my own journey. So they never come to a point where they think I'm bored. And if they're thoughtful, they also don't become depressed and think, oh, this is just too hard, this is taking too long. Because of their commitment, they say, okay, I've committed to this, I've given a life for this. Let me do the best I can with this. I only have this Christian... folk often say, you only have one life, because they don't have a longevity conception that goes beyond this life. So Srila Prabhupada asked us, as devotees, give a life. What's the difficulty? And we're like, what's the difficulty? What's the difficulty? Give a life? What will I be? You're making me a nothing. You're going to extinguish me. You're going to lose my personality and everything. Give a life. And But Srila Prabhupada was unmoved by our disturbance because he knew what he was saying. He knew the reality of what he was saying. Give a life. Give a life to trying to understand and serve Krishna. And there's no harm. And we think, no harm? Like we were in Hong Kong. You know, oh yes, I'll give a life, I'll save the Chinese people. And then I get to Hong Kong and think, there's too many Chinese people here. And they're not interested in what I want to say. Nobody comes, we don't have a temple, we don't have anything. How can I do this? And panic. But Srila Prabhupada very calmly just reminded again, give a life. Give a life. So this verse speaks basically on this point. And in Beijing we were speaking on this point. And then we went to Hong Kong and I gave four classes going through this whole pastime because it's a really wonderful pastime. It's full of like jewels. You know, one time somebody gave me in miniature size, because I do miniature things, so they gave me a little silver box about this big, like this. And it was like a treasure box and had a little round silver top. And it was for my birthday, I got this little box. And I opened it up and they had so thoughtfully collected all these different kinds of rhinestone jewels, all different colors. And they had filled this little miniature box, like a treasure box full of jewels. And it was so beautiful and I kept it to this day. And sometimes I look inside of it and I see all the different jewels. In fact, sometimes I pour them out of my hand and I look at them all. They're so beautiful. How thoughtful. And I put them back in. But now, if I was to say, okay, I mean, these are only glass. They're not real stones. But if they were real jewels, and I'm putting them in my hand and I'm looking at them, I could say, okay, let's look at the rubies. And when I look at the rubies, I suddenly see red ones everywhere. And if I said, now let's look at the sapphires, then my mind would pick up all the blue ones. They're all there. They're all there together, but depending on my gaze, my thinking, I will see different ones. But they're all there. So Krishna's pastimes are like that. They're full of jewels. And according to one's consciousness when speaking or hearing about Krishna, different things come out. You see beautiful sapphires, rubies, emeralds, all kinds of jewels are there. Because Krishna's pastimes are actually from a different plane. It's not this world that we're talking about. And when Krishna comes to this world, he brings that spiritual realm down to this world. And it rests just like this, above this world. And he enacts his pastimes in this way. And the places where he brings his transcendental dham, they become also known as dhams, because they're touched, they're made connection with Krishna and his pastimes. Or Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda and their pastimes. And for the ordinary person, the ordinary man who's interested in his busy life, even if he lives in one of these holy places, he lives down there and his pastimes are there. He lives on the surface, or you could say Krishna's pastimes are here and there's a little curtain covering them. So he lives up here, and you go to Vrindavan, you go to Navadvip, and anyone who lives in these places is very, very fortunate. But it doesn't mean that everybody who lives in a holy place has holy consciousness. It doesn't mean that at all. So this is a great mystery. I can get a plane ride and go to Vrindavan, go to Mathura, go to Mayapur, go to Jagannath Puri. But when I get there, what will I see? There is the challenge. What will I see? And how do I see spiritual things? Through my eyes? Well, I can certainly see the deities by their grace and mercy through my fleshy eyes. But actually in the Dham, you don't see with your eyes, you see through the process of hearing. And hearing from somebody who has heard from somebody who has heard from somebody who has heard from somebody who is pure. And pure means, like when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, instead of going for a sightseeing tour to see all the wonders and bringing your camera with you and taking a few selfies with your children and a lot of pictures to show your friends when you come out from under the hill, instead of that, when the residents of Vrindavan went under the hill, they didn't really notice any of that. The cows didn't notice the grass. The people didn't notice the dwelling places under there. They didn't get hungry. They didn't think, when's prasadam time? They all stood there and they were like stunned, just looking. For 7 days, they just got to look at Krishna. And they didn't almost blink. So this indicates that Krishna is very, very attractive. And that there's a very high level of love required before we're actually, actually, really, real devotees. We're devotees already because we've taken to the path. And devotees are so special in this world because they have an inclination towards something higher than just material life. But a real devotee, what we're trying to give a life for, is to come to that point where we can see Krishna unveiled and his full attractiveness attracts us completely. And that is Krishna consciousness. And that is what Srila Prabhupada came to give to the world. Something so extraordinary you can't even put it into words. We have to always just say things about this world because this is what we know. And so we say, just like when somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, what is it like in the spiritual world? He said, it's like an ocean of LSD. It's not like an ocean of LSD, but they know LSD and they know an ocean. So you put these together and you give them a sense it's very big and it's very thrilling because they liked this substance. So you can find that whatever you would like to put in those two positions when you describe what the spiritual world is like, you will only be able to go to a certain size in your own capacity to understand. And the spiritual world exists way beyond anything that we can actually appreciate from seeing this world. So here, back to this verse. The first thing that I did was I'll read this verse to you and then I'll ask you a question that I asked in China and I'll share with you the difference between possibly your answers and the Chinese people. Mm-hmm. So here is our verse. Yes, is it verse 33? Just see, aho esham varam janma sarva pranyupajivanam Sajanas yeva yesham vai vimukha yanti nahina. Just see how these trees are maintaining every living entity. Their birth is successful. Their behavior is just like that of great personalities. For anyone who asks anything from a tree never goes away disappointed. Now, this is the beginning of a pastime, but this is also a very profound verse, as I said, spoken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So let me first speak about the pastime. After Krishna in Vrindavan, he had satisfied the young girls of Vrindavan who secretly longed to marry him. They were always thinking, when I grow up, I will marry Krishna. He's so beautiful. He's so handsome. He's so charming. I want to marry only Krishna, nobody else. And so in the winter season, in the Hemant season, they took a vow. It is called the Katyayani Vrata. And they went to the Jamuna River every day. And in the cold season in Vrindavan, it's much colder even than here in Melbourne. It's very cold. And they took a vow and they went in very simple saris, very light cloth. They went together, young girls, 10, 12 or younger. Sorry. So they took this vow and they went together. And they went into, they would build out of the sand a deity, because deities can be made out of stone or metal, or even in the mind, it's a bona fide deity. So they built this deity also out of sand, and then they prayed. And they were worshipping Katyayani Devi, as if she was, Katyayani is Yoga Maya, or the energy of Krishna that brings the devotees closer to him. So they were worshipping her. They were thinking, she will help us marry Krishna. They didn't tell their parents. None of their parents knew about this. It was completely secret. And they all went together. They didn't go all separate ways. They all went together. They did it together. And they did it very secretly in the morning. And they would worship Katyayani and pray to her, giving her all kinds of little things. They put gifts around the sand deity they had made. And they would say, please, we want to marry Krishna. So they did this for 1 month, every day. Then they dipped themselves into the Jamuna River in their very, very thin cloth, very, very cold. And they would dip into the Jamuna River, come out first. They would dip in first, come out, and then they would do the puja. Then they would get dressed again, they would go home, and nobody knew what they were doing. And on the last day, the final day of the puja, when they had done everything, and other gopis had also come because it was a little special celebration, they dipped themselves into the Jamuna, and Krishna came and he stole their clothes. And they were all there in the water, freezing cold water. Their feet may be becoming blue. It was so cold. And Krishna took all their clothes and he very gracefully hung them all over the branches of a big tree, a kadamba tree. And he had all his cloth hanging down like flags. All over, he had some of his little friends, little boys. They were bringing a cloth to him and he was putting them all over the tree. And then he called the girls who were all, they didn't see him. Actually, the girls first heard the little boys laughing and they were a little surprised because there wasn't supposed to be anyone there. And the little boys were giggling. And they saw them and they thought, what are they there? Krishna's little friends. What are they doing here? And then Krishna started. And boy, he teased those girls. He told them, you have to come out of the water and get your clothes. You've made an offense. He told them so many things. Anything that he wanted, he told them. And their love was so sweet and so perfect that whatever he told them, however he teased them, they accepted it. But they would not come out of the water. They even told him, we will come out of the water. He said, come out of the water. They couldn't, because they were so chaste. Their chastity was equal to their love of Krishna. But finally, they gave up the thing that was most dear to them, their chastity. Means following the Vedic principles, doing everything according to Shastra. You cannot do this, you should do this. All the injunctions of their religious lives, and they were so transcendental to this. But they followed this. And so they came out and Krishna gave them back their clothes. And he told them, because you see the exchange between them at that time, he explained to them, because of this, you are now like my wives. And so, but it was a very private thing. It wasn't like a big wedding. It wasn't that kind of marriage. But they understood in their hearts that Krishna has accepted us as his wives. So they all went home and they were very sad to leave Krishna. But they all went home. And some of our acharyas say that on the same day, the very same day, Krishna was wandering somewhere else and this pastime took place. And mysterious as it may be, some of our acharyas, all of whom are liberated souls who can meditate on these pastimes and actually see them. Some of them say, no, it wasn't the same day, it was a different day. And they don't argue. Isn't that amazing? You know, we're very scientific, you know, it's like 1 and 1 equals 2, it doesn't equal 3, and so you're wrong and I'm right. But you see, on the spiritual platform, it's quite different than this analytical, materialistic level in which we live. So other acharyas say, no, this pastime took place at a little different time, and it was in the summer. Nevertheless, on that particular day, the boys had not had any breakfast. And so they went to the forest, and Krishna had a plan. He wanted to do something, just as he wanted to do something to favor the young girls. He wanted to also favor some other devotees. So they went into the forest, and as they were walking along, Krishna said to his friends, "My dear friends, look at these trees. It's so hot today. The sun is beating down. It's so fierce. And these trees are like great personalities who are using their own bodies like umbrellas to shade us so that we won't be affected by the heat." He said to his friends, he had particularly nine friends whose names he mentions in the Bhagavatam. And these nine friends were the ones who stand in front, guarding him, behind him, one there, one there, one there, one there, one there, and one there. And the one behind carries an umbrella. And the one in front clears the path of any debris or anything so Krishna can walk. But they don't do it in a reverential way like we would do if we were doing some deity parade. They do it simply out of love. They're casual, they're friendly, they're intimate, they're relaxed. But everything is Krishna. So they're going along, clearing the way, walking, laughing, just going where he wants to go. And he says, he looks at the trees and he tells his friends, "Please glorify these trees." And the boys say, "You are like the crest jewel of all poets. So you please glorify the trees." So then Krishna begins to speak these particular words, glorifying particularly the trees of Vrindavan. So the question I asked in China and in Hong Kong is, what do you know of as gifts that come from trees? Yes?
Shade, fruit, flowers.
Shade, fruit, and flowers, yes. Any more? Yes.
Wood.
Wood, yes.
Sorry, medicine.
Medicines. Yes, very good. Any more? Shade, fruit, flowers, wood, medicines.
Water.
Water. Yes.
Rain.
Rain. Yes, as a result of the trees. Yes.
Fragrances like myrrh.
Fragrances come from the tree's sap, yes. Or the leaves sometimes. Yes. Yes.
Paper.
Paper. Yes.
Oxygen.
Oxygen. Yes. Yes?
Insects, homes.
Yes, homes for animals and insects. Yes, over here. Yes.
Shade.
Yes, yes.
Tree leaves convert sunrise into photosynthesis.
The tree gives?
The trees convert the sunshine, light into photosynthesis.
It can convert the sun into photosynthesis.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. Warm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've experienced walking around the lake. The trees are really big.
Yes.
If you stand very close to them on a cold day, you can feel something.
They give you warmth, shelter, yes. Yes.
Oh, they don't protest even if we cut off a branch.
Yes. Yes. These are all things that Krishna said. Yes. No. Yes? No? Anyone over there?
Cold.
Huh?
Cold.
Cold. They give a Did you say cold?
Cold.
Cold, yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes.
Forests and a nice ambient place to be.
Yes, they give us a nice place to actually be peaceful and happy and enjoy. Yes.
The best thing I can think of is shade.
Shade. Yes. They give us deity. Yes.
Playground.
They give us a playground. Yes. Yes.
The Buddha, Tanya says that more tolerant than a tree.
Yes.
So they teach tolerance.
They teach tolerance. They give us lessons.
Yes. Somewhere to hang our clothes.
Somewhere to hang our clothes. Now, all the answers you gave are the answers that I would expect. They're very nice. Thank you. It was very interesting when I went to Beijing and I asked them, you know, what gifts do trees give? Now, I can't even remember them. I'd have to find a write a list of them. But they gave the most technical answers you could imagine. They can be turned into this and produce this. And it was really funny, I was saying. But what about, and I was like, fruit, you know? What about leaves, shade? And they were going, and then when you do this, you can do this. And I said, you people are amazing. So the things that the Chinese mind can do with trees goes way beyond our understanding of what the gifts that trees can give. So when I went to Hong Kong, I tried the same thing, but Hong Kong people are different. So they gave a reasonable amount of sensible answers. But they too, you know, they're very sophisticated. So they've taken the simplicity of nature and they have manipulated it into forming all kinds of products and so many things, and then they sell that, and so trees can give an economy, trees can give this and so forth. So this is the modern mind. The modern mind is thinking how to take everything and use it in some clever, clever way to get rich.
But,
yes.
Swing.
Yes, they give you a swing. But all the answers that you gave were more natural ones, the natural gifts of trees. So Krishna also, he said, the trees fulfill one's desires with their leaves, flowers, fruits, their shade, their roots, their bark and wood, and also with their fragrance, their sap, their ashes, their pulp and shoots. So some of them we didn't cover, but most of them we did. And then comes a very, very significant verse where Krishna said to the cowherd boys, it is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with their life, wealth, intelligence, and words. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare for others with their life, words, intelligence, and wealth. So these two verses, the one of glorifying the trees, how they are like great personalities, for anyone who asks anything from a tree never goes in vain, and here is the list of all the things that they give. And then taking the example of the tree and comparing it to us as human beings and saying, it is your duty, it is my duty to give for the well-being of others with your body, wealth, mind and words. This Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does. So in Adi Leela, chapter 9, Lord Chaitanya is describing the Chaitanya tree. This is a very fascinating chapter, but for some of us it's difficult to read because it's again like the chapters where we hear about all the dynasties of kings. This chapter gives, you could say, like dynasties of devotees, lists of Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Acharya, the different Panchatattva devotees, and all the devotees who became devotees of their devotees, and the devotees who were devotees of those devotees, and so on. And if you go outside and you have a look, our tree outside now has beautiful blossoms, but oftentimes it's covered in leaves. And you'll see a branch, it starts, it comes out, a big branch, there's a trunk. So Lord Chaitanya said, I'm the trunk. I'm the trunk of the tree of well-being for the whole universe. That's a pretty big statement. I'm the trunk. And as the trunk goes up, 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 it turns into two trunks. And one trunk is Nityananda Prabhu, and one trunk in this analogy is Advaita Acharya. And if you look at a tree, you see there's a main trunk, it trunks out, then there are big branches, then there are sub-branches, and then there's twigs, and all of them have leaves. The whole thing. And when everything has leaves, the tree looks really beautiful. And you can't count how many leaves there are, because there can be thousands and thousands, even more than thousands of thousands of leaves on a tree. And a big tree can maybe have a million leaves. And they're all coming from the trunk, to the main branches, to the sub-branches, to the twigs, and so forth. So Lord Chaitanya said, thinking to himself, I am the trunk of the tree of devotional love. I am the trunk of the tree. That means that this bhakti, love of Godhead, it resides in me. And I am also the gardener. I've become the gardener, because when Krishna comes in the form of Lord Chaitanya, he doesn't say, I'm God, I'm God, I'm God, worship me. He says, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And he demonstrates what it means to love Krishna on such a high level, like a PhD teacher coming here and teaching some of these little children how to write A, B, and C. So he's teaching on such a, he's such a high qualified transcendental personality, but he's teaching simple things for simple people in a difficult age. And he says, I'm the gardener, I'm also the trunk of the tree. And as the tree is growing, I'm watering it and watering it, and it's growing so beautifully, and now it's fruiting. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of mangoes. If you've ever seen a big mango tree in fruit, there's a little stem that comes down and then the mango hangs. And they look quite extraordinary, like almost like ornaments on a Christmas tree, for those of us who have not seen a mango tree. They hang, they sort of hang all over the place. And to get to the very top and get those down, someone has to climb up there with a basket of some sort to get them. If they all fall right to the ground, fall splat, they're all ruined. So they know when the fruit is going to come ripe, and there are qualified people who climb up that tree with their basket or something on their back, and they pick those fruit, and they're just so delicious, and they bring them down. And then what do? They sell them. And so they stand there or stand somewhere in a market and they say, my mangoes are so much, whatever the price, and that nobody's buying them, so they think, okay, make them cheaper. My mangoes are $2 for 10, and nobody's buying them, they're not interested, so they say, my dollars are $1 for 10, you make a big, you know, and then eventually you get someone's attention and they all come and they say, wow, these are mangoes, so cheap, and they start to buy them. So Lord Chaitanya said, I've got so much fruit of love of Godhead. I can't distribute it all myself. I can't get into the market and get everybody together by myself, because my love of Godhead fruit is meant to be distributed all over the universe. Not only in Melbourne, Australia, not only in Australia, not only on the earth, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, is Jagannath, the Lord of the whole of everything. So when he's giving in such a way that it's inconceivable. So he wants to give, but how can he give everybody? Of course he can, but instead what he says is, you should all help me. You should come and help. Otherwise I can't do it all by myself. So Srila Prabhupada speaks about this. And he explains that this Krishna consciousness movement is designed in such a way that everybody should come together and without discrimination they should give. They should learn to give. Giving and giving is the dharma of devotees. Now, we can later possibly raise some very practical questions on this, like how much can I give, and I'll probably give too much and then I'll have all sorts of problems or whatever. There are practical questions that may occur for each one of us in our daily lives. But the principle first should be understood. Because by understanding the principle, we can guide ourselves towards it more and more, depending on our capacity. So Lord Chaitanya says like this, that you should all help me distribute this love of Krishna. And this love of Krishna, it comes in many forms. It comes in the form of chanting and hearing, and all the devotional activities can produce the kind of joy that eating this fruit will give to the people. And I want to see all the poor, hungry, starving people eating my fruit. This is my desire. So Krishna, Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, when he's speaking about this verse where Krishna is speaking about trees, he says something very interesting. Remembering this is separate, this is in Krishna's story, and Lord Chaitanya is saying, please help me to distribute this love of Krishna. And I am like the tree, and I am the gardener, and the fruit, if you give this fruit, you'll become so happy. This is in Chaitanya Leela. Back now to Krishna Leela. When Krishna is describing all the things that the trees give, and saying how human beings should be like trees, he says that human beings who act for the benefit of others are called devotees. Human beings who act for the benefit of others are called devotees. So here in this context, the same principle is being spoken of. The same mood is there in Krishna's pastimes as Lord Chaitanya, because Krishna and Lord Chaitanya is same. But in Lord Chaitanya's leela, Krishna is doing it, giving to everyone. He says, this is Krishna speaking to the cowherd boys. This is not speaking, preaching to us. He tells the cowherd boys that human beings who act for the benefit of others are called devotees. And those who act for their own benefit only pretend to be saintly and virtuous. So there he is, glorifying trees in the forest of Vrindavan, surrounded by beautiful trees and praising them. So the boys are listening to Krishna glorifying and praising the trees, and they think it's very nice, it's so nice to hear what he's saying. But actually what Krishna is saying is a little deeper than that. He's saying because these trees are residents of Vrindavan, they're very special. He's not referring to every tree, but these trees are very special. And the boys are listening to this. And they say to Krishna, oh Krishna, you speak so beautifully. Your words are like the earrings on the ears of a poet. They're so beautiful. You speak so nicely. And they're smiling and laughing and playing. You know, this is not a lecture that they're receiving. They're just laughing and praising the trees. They say, your words are graceful and sublime. You are a great poet, and whatever you say, it's appropriate. Whatever you say, it's right. And they say, you're so talented. This is little boys playing with each other. You're so talented that you're more intelligent even than Brihaspati. Brihaspati is known to be the greatest scholar in Vedic times. He's the teacher of the devas who live in the heavens, and he's so great. And you know more than him. That's amazing. They're praising him. Ah, you're so good. You're so good. We have so much fun being with you. And then Krishna says something. He says to them, that may be so, but still, one day, you will personally see the truth of my words. And he leaves that thought with the cowherd boys. He's glorified the trees. He's talked about how the trees are so giving and giving and giving. And the boys like to hear that. And then he says, one day you'll understand this. Now I'll take 2 more minutes and explain a little more of the story that we will have to go through very quickly if we're going to complete the whole story in 3 mornings. That soon after that, because the boys hadn't had breakfast, and Krishna's so tricky. You should be very careful if you want to love Krishna. He's so tricky. He's very sweet, but he's very tricky. So what he did was, he wanted to benefit some other devotees. And so he took his friends, who were his devotees, and that morning he walked them in a different direction than normal. They went so they went up towards Kamyavan, which is over to the west in Vrindavan. He walked them through different forests that they didn't normally go through. And he took them to an area there were no fruit trees. And they were walking along and they were coming towards a forest that was full of Arjun trees. And Arjun trees are kind of like very tall and they're not fruity. And they're going along. And the boys started to remember, we didn't have any breakfast. And what did Krishna done? He's taken them away from where they could get fruit. He's taken them away from where the servants of Krishna's mother and father in Nandagram would have sent food for them. Every day they send food for the boys. But they couldn't find them because he took them in a different direction. So they started becoming very hungry. And they thought to themselves, this is different than us. You have to understand the difference between an exalted, pure personality and ourselves. They thought, we're very hungry, so Krishna must be hungry. We have to get something for Krishna to eat. And they thought, because they're so subtle, so love, their love makes them so subtle, so they thought, you know, like if you come, somebody comes to your house and you say to them, oh, you must be hungry. They feel a bit embarrassed, they don't want to disturb you. No, I'm okay. And you go, no, you must be hungry. No, it's all right. You might be hungry, but you don't want to say it. But if the person says, oh, I'm so hungry, I'm having something to eat, will you join me? It's much easier to say, oh, okay, you take a little too. So they said to Krishna, oh Krishna, we're so hungry. We're so hungry. We think we're going to, we have like a fire burning in our stomach. It feels like a big ball of fire. We think we're going to die in a moment. It's so hot outside and we're so starving. What can we do? And then Krishna told them what they should do. He told them that don't go this way because look, there's all these Arjun trees and this grove doesn't have any fruit trees. He knew. Don't go this way. Instead, you follow the sandy pathway of the Jamuna, walk down the Jamuna, down by the side of the Jamuna, until you get to Surasenapur. And Surasenapur is just near Mathura. He said, you go to Mathura, just nearby, and there you will find some really amazing, special people. And these people are so nice. They're brahmanas. And today they're doing a special yajna. And they've cooked so many wonderful things, like a big Sunday feast, a massive big Sunday feast. And they're cooking, they've cooked everything. And when they see you, they're so warm-hearted, just like these trees. They're so nice that when they see you, little boys, hungry, they will satisfy all your desires. So go there. And then he told them one thing. He said, one thing you have to remember is when you go to beg, you always have to be very tolerant and patient. So he encouraged them, these wonderful brahmanas are there, they will take care of you. At the same time, be tolerant and patient. And then the boys got really excited. They were so excited, they just wanted to go immediately. And some of the boys stayed there, and Krishna sat down under the trees in the Ashok Grove. It was very beautiful, near the Jamuna. And some of the boys started running on the pathway by the side of the Jamuna, all the way to Mathura to bring back food for Krishna and all boys. So this is where we will stop today. And we will meditate on two things. What Lord Chaitanya, how he glorifies trees and says that we have to become like trees. We have to lead a life in which we're trying to give to others. And we can meditate also on the gifts that trees give and how they're very special, and they even can be chopped down for wood, and they accept that, so be it. Of course, as I understand, and many of the devotees in Hong Kong, who are very, very practical people, Chinese people, they understood that the tree doesn't say, chop me down. The people just come along and chop them down. So it's not that they're saying, kill me and give me to the people. But the trees in Vrindavan, although no one chops them down, they have these qualities. And here in this world, we see a semblance of that in the function of the life of the trees around us. So I've gone a little late. If there's any questions that can be quickly asked, if anyone has any, on our pastime so far, yes.
I don't know how to put it into words. We're talking about the love of Krishna, the cowherd boys and girls, and how they fell in love with him too, in a conscious
yes.
way.
Yes.
Not actual lust, but
yes.
pure love.
Yes.
But some fakes, I don't know whether I'm allowed to say that, if you give me permission, I will tell that. The Catholics, for example, I'm not offending anyone here, they abuse children sexually, they abuse children. I can't imagine that. How can they do that?
Well, the thing is, you see, in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 13, it describes that there's a tree, right? And there's a tree, and it's standing on the edge of the water. And so the tree is here, and there's a reflected tree in the water. And the tree in the water has all the same shapes as the tree here, but it's upside down, right? They join at the trunk. And then the top of this tree is the bottom of this tree. So what is topmost in the spiritual world, which is this pure love of Krishna, giving for the pleasure of Krishna, when it's reflected into this reflected tree in the water of the material world, it becomes a very base thing. It becomes a horrible thing. So when we see the horrible things of this world, a thoughtful devotee begins to understand that this is what happens in the reflection. Everything is down that should be up. So the people who live in this world, in the material world, they're here because they're selfish. And so even if they're in positions of power or responsibility, especially in Kali Yuga, they may very easily be found out 10 years later, 20 years later, to have done something abominable. And so then people, because they don't understand this is the reflection, this is the reality, they think this is the reality, this is everything. So when something goes amiss here, they dismiss everything. And they think God is just a myth.
So in other words, it will backfire on them?
Backfire on them? It will... Yes, they will have to take the... They will have to pay for that. You see, we think... We look... Srila Prabhupada gives an example. If the window is open and we see somebody run past the window, we only see the part where he ran past the window. We don't see where he was coming from. We don't see where he went. So we start talking about him, we say, oh, I saw Mr. Smith, he ran past the window. That's all we know. We don't know what did Mr. Smith do before, why was he running, we don't know where he went. So when we see, it's very tricky, we see the person who is the victim, we see the person who is making the act at this present moment, but we don't know, this person who's making the act will have to become in future a victim. Because as punishment for the act, he'll have to take the act. So we don't know what went before, we don't know what will go after, we just see this. So we're not very learned. We don't understand the full picture. We can't make the whole assessment from that little part that we've seen. We don't know what went before, whether this person is a victim now. This person who's the victim, were they a culprit before? Or not. We don't know. So therefore, we as devotees, we feel compassion and concern for these things. But at the same time, we know, we don't know exactly what took place there. We see what we saw, but we don't know the past and we don't know the future. But Krishna knows the whole picture. So we leave it in his hands. We act, but we leave it in his hands. Yes. Saintly people. He said, yes. He said, human beings who act for the benefit of others are called devotees. This is a definition of a devotee. Or actually, he was speaking of the brahmanas in particular, but devotees. Those who act for their own benefit only pretend to be saintly and virtuous. So this is a challenge I found when I was reading this. I sort of went, go. Because there's a lot of me that acts for my own benefit only. I think all of us would, if we're introspective and thoughtful, we see there's a lot of it. Especially around prasadam time. We're like, oh, time for me. So we need to, therefore, improve. Because we may be pretending to be saintly, and we should try not to pretend to be saintly, we should become actually saintly. Yes?
Did everybody go under the hill when Krishna helped
her? Everybody.
Everybody, no one was on the edge.
No one. Everyone went under the hill. Even animals went under the hill. Some animals stayed on top. Cows went under the hill. Deers and others, they stayed on the top, but they didn't have any effect from the lightning or the rain. Not even, you know, it's said by some of our acharyas that not even a dot of dust was affected. It's not like all the rocks came crumbling down like in Nepal. It wasn't like that. Initially, to create the barrier, Krishna's energies worked to protect the people. But once they were under the hill and he was being touched by Krishna,
and
everyone... The hill wobbled when Krishna was being inattentive. And the boys, that's why I wanted to mention that. The boys were looking at Krishna and they were so friends of Krishna. They loved him so much, but they were friends, which meant... Friends means we're kind of equal. Right, so they loved him so much, but they were friends, so they started saying, Krishna, your hand must be tired, so just transfer it over to our sticks, and we'll hold our sticks up, and you can have a rest. And then they held up their sticks, and Krishna just very slightly let the weight down a little bit, and all their sticks broke. So this is us, you know, well, I can do this, I can do that, boom. But he was holding. And Sanatan Goswami tells us that sometimes Krishna actually put his hand down and the hill held itself. So this is very mysterious. This is Vrindavan, everything in Vrindavan. Every atomic particle of Vrindavan is there for Krishna's pleasure. All the energies that are at work are there for Krishna's pleasure. And all the people who are there are only thinking of Krishna all the time. They're not ruled and dictated by their minds or their needs. They don't have needs like we have. They have a sense of simply, I'm dependent totally on Krishna. And so our sadhana bhakti process is the development of that here in the material world. To develop the mentality that I'm dependent on Krishna. I'm dependent on Krishna. Krishna will take care of me. And as that grows, now maybe we have a tiny bit of that, as it grows in all the difficult situations of our life, maybe it will take a long time or a short time, but we come to the point where we're sort of 1% dependent on Krishna, 99% dependent on ourselves and family and so forth, then it grows and grows till we're 50% depending on Krishna, 50% of the time we're not, and we can't, of course, can't see it so dramatically, but it, you feel it's growing, it's growing. Now more of the time I depend on Krishna, I trust Krishna will take care of me, and then I see He's taking care of me. And that nourishes the idea that I should keep doing that, build up the momentum. And then when one becomes very highly trusting Krishna, then one almost isn't even in the material world. One is in touch with Krishna in many, many ways. And so being in the material world is no longer in any way a barrier to one's sense of care and protection from Krishna. And that's what we're aspiring for. And that's what we have to give one life for. It's nothing. A life is nothing. And the gift that we're trying to achieve is so incredible. It's so priceless. And the what we're asked is nothing. So we need to learn to see in that way. And if we can see in that way, then we translate that into practical step-by-step, what should I do next, what should I do next, as we grow and develop this way, this life, this one temporary life, can lead us to a position where we're in touch with Krishna and serving Him, and He becomes our reality and our everything. Now He might seem a little bit like a fairy story, Indian religion or something, but it's not that, but we have to continue. And Srila Prabhupada's appearance in Melbourne, and of course all over the world, but Melbourne is a super significant place throughout the whole world because Srila Prabhupada came here regularly, and there was one man called William Kerr. He never became a devotee. His wife was devotional, but he never was interested. But he took all these videos of Srila Prabhupada, and there's more video coverage of Srila Prabhupada in Melbourne than almost anywhere else in the world. So Melbourne is a highly significant place in Srila Prabhupada's preaching. So we're here and we have this responsibility to maintain this in a way, and Srila Prabhupada sits there, and if you notice, he looks straight at Radha Balava, and so firmly situated there, taking care, and we just have to not get in the way. At least don't get in the way, and if possible, give your life for the service of Srila Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya, and our own Krishna consciousness. Thank you. Hare Krishna.